and really feel free and enjoy the ride with us.
Thank you.
Especially in the public service, if there is any and at a managerial level, I just want to know.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to everybody. Chairperson, a background about myself. I was born in the Karoo. I grew up in the Little Karoo, in Oudtshoorn, where I completed my studies as a teacher. So I was in education first. I taught at a number of schools in the Western Cape, where I eventually held the position of principal at two schools. One was at Toes River and at the Kramer Secondary School, and later at Tafelsig High School in Mitchell's Plain. But I became involved in trade union or in trade unionism at a very young age when I started out as an educator. I first joined the Cape Teachers, the Professional Teachers Union, and later, when I resigned in 1996, I joined the trade union movement on a full-time basis. I always had a special interest in worker issues, and that became my passion. I then completed my, I first registered with the University of South Africa, UNISA, for BA degree, because I completed a diploma in education. And later I completed my BA studies part-time at the University of Western Cape. I also enrolled at the University of Cape Town for a postgraduate diploma in employment law and social security. And I also finished or completed a management development program at the Business School of the University of Stellenbosch. At present, I'm in the full-time employee of the Public and Allied Workers Union. PAWUSA is one of the smaller public service or trade unions within the public service. We're affiliated to COSATU and we are represented in the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council, where I serve as one of the councillors, and I've also served on the EXCO as well as the FINCO of the PSCBC, which of course gave me that experience and that knowledge to how to manage a diverse organization like, for instance, the PSCBC. My work as the general secretary of the union is I act like the CEO of the organization, and that has exposed me to various managerial situations within the union. So briefly, my background: I'm divorced. I've got two kids. My son is third year, final year, a journalist student. My daughter is first year, civil engineering student. I enjoy jazz music and I love sport. And that's more or less the chairperson who I am.
Thank you very much for that. And could you then just briefly tell us what you understand to be the function of the Public Service Commission?
Yeah, Chair, I know that the Public Service Commission has been established in terms of the Constitution. It's one of the Chapter 9 institutions of the country. The mandate of this institution, of the Public Service Commission, it is derived from what is structured within the Constitution, and that is maintaining a public service of high quality and high standard, and also developing a professional ethic within the public service. I know that the public service, they have achieved quite a number of, or rather they have made quite a number of achievements through the years after being established in terms of the reports and the research that they've conducted in terms of the public service. I also know that it also acts as an institution where the general public can complain to if they have a problem, for instance, at how they've been dealt with at, say, for instance, a public institution. And also they deal with the grievances of public of public servants. Further, I know that it has got different stakeholders. I know that the Office of the Public Service is, I would say, is more the administration arm of the Public Service Commission. And then, of course, there's interaction at an executive level with Cabinet, with the National Assembly, with the National Council of Provinces, with provincial legislatures, and that the Commission has to report annually to those institutions, especially the National Assembly. That's more or less that I've read and I know about.
Mr. Omek, are you familiar with the Batofile principles?
Just a minute. Yes, that is a credo which mentions people first, and I think that is the public. The DPSA actually started that. I think it's to inculcate a sense of responsibility at the public servant level through its interaction with public, and also to deliver in terms of the mandate of the public service, where if you talk about service excellence, in this case, I think we all need to strive within the public service towards service excellence. But service delivery, actually, I would say, equals service excellence. And that is, I would say, ultimately, what Batopele means, that you need to consider the people who you are serving. A public servant is actually a servant of the people. And I think that is, it's more or less what the Batopele principle means.
Mr. Omek, please tell me one or two sentences, your strong points and your weak points.
I'm a human being and I have my weak points. Strong points, I would say I'm very much aware of meeting deadlines. I think that's a responsibility that we need to have, especially with the work I am doing at the moment. One of my strong points, I always adhere to deadlines. Secondly, I would say that I'm always punctual. I believe in punctuality.
We have seen that this morning.
Thanks, Jay. So I would say those are the ones that I would say, and of course I'm a dedicated worker. I always try to finish any task as diligently as possible and within the time frame that was given to me. I'm always very loyal towards whoever employs me, and I'm a team player, and I work with a collective. But if need be, then I will also take the lead. So that's more or less, I would say, in a nutshell, my strong point, my weak point. I become very intolerant with people who do not adhere to time frames.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Other members, any further questions?
Thank you, Chair. I think you've answered my question, but I had a question on what values are going to add in the public service. I think you've answered partly of the values that you can add. But I know that with the media, always they criticize the public service on matters of corruption. What do you think you can do in order to fight corruption in the public service?
Thank you. No, I would say that corruption is something that is widespread in terms of what we read in the media. And I think that is a role that the Public Service Commission has to play. I think they've conducted quite a number of investigations into corruption. I would say, if you could ask me what value I would have to this, I would say one should look maybe in terms of what are the existing systems that are in place. How is it possible for a public servant to defraud government so easily? So there must be something wrong with the system and with the procedures and with the policies in terms of which they are employed. So I would say, if although research has been conducted, maybe one should have a relook in terms of how these systems operate that make it possible for people to become corrupt.
In front of me, I have the Public Service Commission Act. I am familiar with it. Can you tell us what it entails?
I'm going to be very clear. I'm sorry, be very honest with you. I haven't read that act, the Public Service Commission Act. But if I could give a broad outline in terms of how I maybe perceive it, I don't want to go there. I might be like saying the wrong things. But I'm honest, I'm not very much familiar with it. But I think I'm a quick learner and I will always see the background.
Okay.
Well, maybe if I were to follow up on the other question, you know, with your interaction and knowledge about the Public Service Commission, do you think it is delivering efficiently on its mandate, and have you observed any shortcomings within the Public Service Commission?
Chairperson, I have interacted with the Public Service Commission at quite a few times through my involvement with the Public Service Coordinating Bali Council and also through the PCTA. I would say that if you read through the research and the report that they've delivered up to now, I would say they've been successful. Mm-hmm. Also, if you read the annual reports, I was lucky in the sense that I've always attended the budget speech of the Minister of Public Service Administration, Minister Moloketi, the then Minister, here at Parliament, and where she then reported to Parliament in terms of, and then she also mentioned the Public Service Commission, which of course is part of the which was part of her budget vote speech. That's where I got some information about the successes of the Public Service Commission. But if I could say, you don't read much about the successes in newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe more focus should be put in terms of the successes of what was achieved in the Public Service Commission, instead of having all these negative things coming out. They're going to investigate this corruption in there, that province, or that. And then I can also say, if I can take one of the reports, for instance, that I've noted, was that there was some research or investigation about leave and overtime at the Department of Correctional Services, where, for instance, I saw afterwards that when we have negotiated the Resolution 1 of 2007 of the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council, where this issue came up of leave and overtime, for especially people in the correctional services. And there one could actually draw on a report which was produced by the Public Service Commission. Now, taking all that into account, I would say yes, they are a successful institution.
Any shortcomings?
The shortcomings, as I've stated, maybe there's not enough focus in terms of media exposure. I would also say that maybe there's not enough focus in terms of addressing the skills need within the public service. Maybe they should do that by working in conjunction with other public service institutions, like, for instance, the PCTA and also the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council. I remember that there was a public service summit that had to be arranged during September of this year because of certain problems it couldn't materialize. So I would say that if one could maybe reorganize a public service summit where the PSC could also then contribute, like they did in the last time, I think that was out in March 2007, I think it was around there, where, for instance, the Director General of the Office of the Public Service made a keynote address at one of the settings.
Honourable Chairperson, Mr. Fandi, you are someone who says that a background of union.
Yes.
And here in Parliament, the public service committee, they always fight for affirmative action in this department. So now that you are coming from union, there should be no whether the public service, the affirmative action is implemented in the public service. And also, if you could tell the panel your understanding of affirmative action. The first question is whether in the public service affirmative action is implemented and your understanding of affirmative action.
Yes, thank you, Ben. Yes, affirmative action has been implemented in the public service. I'm not always sure whether they've met their targets. Because from time to time you read about grievances or you read about disputes that have been lodged in terms of this, what we call positive discrimination, if I could put it that way. So I would say that in certain sectors, it has been met, but there might be sectors that the public service still needs to attend to. It's also about skills, that in certain communities who have been advantaged through the years, you have certain skills at this moment which you don't find or have in the disadvantaged side of outer democratic society. So, if there is a vision to correct that imbalance, which I know there is, then it's fine. Affirmative action is an ongoing process. It is not something that will be determined, it will end in 2 years or 3 years' time. It is there, it is written into the Constitution, and it will be there for a long time to address all these imbalances. Your second question, ma'am?
No, you've answered.
Oh.
Understanding of affirmative action.
Thank you. Now, over and above the Public Service Commission Act that was referred to earlier, what are the other laws that you are aware of that are governing the functioning of the Commission?
The first thing I would think of is the Constitution. And then, of course, the Public Service Act, maybe they will refer to the Public Service Act. Mm-hmm. There is the Public Finance Management Act. As I say, I'm not quite sure, mm-hmm. but in terms of how I see, how I perceive that the Commission should function, there are certain acts that they cannot ignore, the rules that I mentioned now. And, of course, the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, the Labor Relations Act, and those terms that go with it.
Thank you. And are you aware of any changes that have taken place within the public service which have come about as a result of the recommendations that were made by the Public Service Commission?
I think I need to mention the senior or appointments at senior management level. I think a lot of changes have taken place at that level, especially creating an opportunity for women and for disabled people to become part of a senior management level. And I'm sure that taken into account investigations and research done by the Public Service Commission, that is something that I think they can be proud of, that at least they have achieved that. So I would say that is a major success. Other ones, I can't recall exactly now, but I would say that is a reference. And then also in terms of creating awareness with the public servant that he has to be aware of the ethics in terms of the service that he is providing to public. There are a number of departments where I personally feel that maybe the public service should go into and do some research there.
But I don't want to mention the name now.
Okay.
For obvious reasons.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, the fact that the Public Service Commission can only make recommendations about their findings when they, you know, monitor and evaluate operations in the public service and not enforce their findings, do you find that as a strength or as a weakness?
Yeah, I mean, even if they have hearings or investigations, they can't summon, or even if they summon you, or, then they cannot enforce it. Maybe it is, I would say it depends on the nature of an investigation. If it's criminal, then of course it needs to be referred to the criminal justice system or the criminal justice sector. If it refers to, for instance, labor relations matters, it needs to be referred to the Department of Labor. But if, for instance, the and it's not only the Public Service Commission that has a problem. You take, for instance, the Human Rights Commission. They have a similar problem. So I would say if that is something that is hampering the Public Service Commission to fully deliver on their mandate, and that is something that needs to be discussed at an executive level or even in Parliament. Where is there changes that need to be made to the Public Service Commission Act? Then you need to address it that level, and also maybe involve stakeholders like the trade unions, for instance, to assist the public service to deliver on its mandate in terms of its constitutional obligations.
Thank you. Thank you,
Chairperson. Mr. Van Dijk, what would be your understanding of the role of the PSC insofar as the dispute resolution process is in progress within the public sector?
I know that that a public sector can lodge a complaint with the Public Service Commission. But the public service cannot resolve if it is a matter that needs to be referred to a bargaining council or a sectoral council. But this resolution within the public service, I would say, would be on a broader scope. In the sense that it won't deal with individual disputes, but more of a nature where something is, that's my perception, is lodged as a collective, maybe dispute. And also then, if, for instance, it comes to some sort of an agreement that this dispute needs to be referred, then it needs to be referred. But I don't know whether the Public Service Commission would be in a position to resolve disputes at certain workplaces or within certain departments, depending on what the nature of it is. That's what I'm ordering. But it has to play a pivotal role in at least assuring or reassuring labor peace within the public service.
Any further questions?
No.
Now, you have mentioned your strength. I don't want to concentrate on the weaknesses. But could you share with us briefly as to what is your passion? What is it that you're very passionate about? Because my observation is that, you know, to be successful or not to be successful depends to a certain extent on the passion that one has. So in the context of the public service, what is your passion?
And I think I've indicated that my passion is workers' interest. I would like to see that a public servant gets the best deal from his employer. I have interacted with the employer and with different public servant trade unions at different levels and from different political positions. And they all have something in common, and that is they need to work in the interest. What they need to do is they need to negotiate, they need to work towards the interest of the worker. So I have had this passion for the disadvantaged, or the underdog, or those ones who are not always, who don't always get recognition. Those are the ones that I have a passion for, and to, through any contribution, to make it possible for them all to become part of a broader society, or a workforce, or whatever that might be. So that is something that is, maybe it's like a social responsibility, I don't know. But it's something that has been with me for quite a number of years. So that is, in terms of the public service, I would say that is something that has been telling me for some time now.
Right, say we appoint you now as a public service commissioner. How do you see yourself in that position, being able to pursue this passion that you have for the
public? And Chair, I have noted that one of the key performance areas, the KPAs of the Public Service Commission, is labor relations improvement. Now that's the key performance area. That means that you need to also attend to that one and to concentrate on it. Now I feel, given my background and my experience working in labor relations, I will be able to contribute immensely in terms of that aspect of the public service commission. I must always say, also say that I'm a registered personnel practitioner with a South African Board for Personnel Practitioners, and also with the people with the IPE, IPM, Institute for People Management, where I became aware of trends within human resources management, but also public relations management. And given that background and that knowledge that I've gained, that I've, with all the congresses that I've attended nationally or internationally, I would be able to contribute towards that key performance area of the PS.
As I was going through your CV and certificate, I realized, and I actually became interested, that you attended an advanced course on negotiation skills offered by Professor Manipulsa.
Yes.
I hope you enjoyed it. He was my little organizational behavior, and I really enjoyed his lecture.
Yeah, we enjoyed both. I can just say this, that one thing about him that I also noticed, this is a part of the interview, is that he succeeded in teaching three of our guys at a one of these workshops to swim within an hour. I won't mention the guy's name because they are well known to some of us around the table.
Just now from you, are there any questions that you'd like to ask from the panel?
Yeah, Chairperson. The advertisement was very vague. We didn't know how to prepare for this interview. But I don't know when the incumbent is supposed to take up the position. And of course, I'm based in Cape Town. I have worked in Pretoria previously. So there are, if appointed there, there's a certain personal issue that you will need to attend to before you move to Pretoria. So the only thing I would actually want to know is by when this appointment will be made, and that's all.
Yeah. I cannot tell you exactly when, because the process is, as a committee, we make a recommendation to the National Assembly en route to the President. So it is the President who will finally appoint. But we will definitely let you know before the end of this year about the outcome of this
No, thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you once more for making yourself available. Even if you say you did not know how to prepare, we are happy. we have been able to get what we wanted to get from you.
Just finally, in conclusion from my side, Mr. Chair, is I would like to thank the panel for affording me this opportunity to be interviewed at this level. The first time that I've been interviewed at Parliament, and I will always remember this one.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of your day. You don't have to travel far. Where are you staying?
I'm staying out in Kelsey, but I have to go back to work now.
Okay. Enjoy it anyway.
Thank you.
Okay,
so was Daniel Albertus Fabric.
Yes.
Okay. I got it.
Thank you.
My school is I think I hope that the tapes are on. Welcome and thanks for coming. We appreciate the interest that you have shown in the position of Public Service Commissioner, and we would like to apologize for keeping you waiting, but I'm sure we are within the time frame that we had indicated to you. And thanks for your patience. And then my name is Jane Masumela. You are from the Northwest. Do you know me? Have you heard about me?
Yes.
Oh, good. Otherwise, I would say you are not from the Northwest. Okay, I'm the chairperson of this committee, and I have with me Honorable Ulysses from the PA. I have Honorable Chwete from the ANC and Honorable Fabaza, also from the ANC. So we have seen your CV, the documents that you have sent, and but over and above that, we would like you to also tell us briefly about your experience. But before then, I just want to alert you that the proceedings here will be recorded. We hope you don't have a problem with it.
No, I don't.
So if you answer, please to make sure that the mic is on so that you are able to record. So if you could just briefly share with us your experience in the public service, where you come from, and your experience in management later.
Thank you, ma'am. Before I start with the interview, I'd just like to apologize. If the panel members see me yawning, you must bear with me. I had to wake up very early this morning at 3:30.
Oh.
Yeah. But briefly, I started working in the public service as a teacher at the Kutlano Secondary School in Yefenezop. My duties basically included those of an assistant teacher, you know, like guiding students and teaching them and preparing material and going over material and examination and so forth. I worked there as a teacher for a period of 3 years, and then after I moved back home to Potchefstroom where I was born, where I also worked as a teacher for a period of about 6 months. I think that the experience I gathered as a teacher stand me in good stead in the sense that I'm able to can face a large audience, address a large audience, and articulate my good point. After having served as a teacher, I went into the private sector where I worked as a sales representative for a Sorghum beer brewery. I wouldn't touch on that one because I think the panel is more interested in my public service experience. Then thereafter, I went to work for the Department of Home Affairs in Potchefstroom, where I rendered across-the-counter services. The services that I basically rendered was in relation to the registration of births, marriages, and deaths. And in some instances, I had to assist as an interpreter in civil cases, assisted with payments of maintenance and so on. But basically what I learned at the Department of Home Affairs is that that's where I picked up on my, what we today call the Batopili principle, because we used to say that the customer is king, and normally there will always be conflict, you know, when rendering across the counter services, but I did manage well. I left the Department of Home Affairs to go and work for the Department of Education. I went through the ranks for, at the Department of Education from a personnel officer up until the level of chief personnel officer, where I was promoted. And I basically worked at entry level in conditional services, and I went then through the ranks, as I've indicated, up to the level of chief personnel officer. It was also a big institution, you know, as compared to the Department of Home Affairs as well. And I did well because I was promoted to the post of assistant director at the Department of Health in Rustenburg District Office. Now, if I may go back, at the Department of Education, that's where I can pick up my managerial skills, because as I rose through the ranks, I ended up being, you know, part of the team that was tasked with the recruitment, selection, induction of employees, training of employees. And at the Department of Health, I worked as an assistant director, but as a generalist, because I was responsible for the whole administration of the district office, human resources, provisioning, finance, and all other related services. And I think that's where actually I happened to have sharpened my management skills, because the district office was very big. You know, I was responsible for the whole administration of the district office, and the district manager was the acting regional manager. So in a way, I was also attached to the administration of the regional office. Administration of the district hospitals, health centers, clinics, and I think I did well as well, because for the 3 years that I stayed at the Department of Health, we won the competition for best health district in the year 1999, and in the year 2000 we were second runners-up. And in the same year, my information services won the best service information directorate, sub-directorate, nationally. I was then recruited by the National Department of Housing, where I occupied the post of executive assistant to the office of the Director General, Mrs. Mpumi Mpofu. She was then still Mrs. Mumalo. Basically, briefly, I ran the office of the Director General, and I acted as liaison between various stakeholders, managed the finances of the office, managed the personnel, and liaised between the office and the minister. Having been in the office, I think I worked under three ministers. I worked under Minister Sankey, then worked under Minister Mapanda, and then worked under Minister Sisulu. Thereafter, I was recruited by the Northwest Provincial Legislature, where briefly I would like to bore the members on committee, because I think the members are very committee work. I served as a director manager for committees, and after some time the secretary then requested me to head the research and information services of the Northwest Provincial Legislature. Now, I think the experience that I've gathered in the legislature, there is some sort of similarity between what the Public Service Commission does and what the legislatures do, because it's a question of investigations, it's a question of monitoring, evaluations, oversight, and so on. And I think the experience that I've gathered as a legislature will stand me in good stead, because what I'm currently doing in terms of monitoring and evaluation over the strategies of departments, the annual reports of the department, budgets of the department, the research work that I'm doing for the members, you know, the public participation work that we do for the members, because I see that the commission as well has got oversight. They've got unannounced, and that's what they basically do in support of the members. And
yes, thank you very much. Could you then tell us briefly, in your understanding, what are the functions of the Public Service Commission?
Briefly, the functions of the Public Service Commission emanate from the stipulations of the Constitution, specifically Section 195 and 196 of the Constitution. Section 195 of the Constitution establishes the principles and values of public administration. Now, the Public Service Commission is legalized by way of the Constitution in Section 196. And what the Public Service Commission basically does is to investigate, to monitor, and evaluate public administration within the Republic as a whole. They also have got the mandate to ensure that personnel practices within the public service are in accordance with the rules and regulations of the public service. The Public Service Commission has also got to advise national and provincial departments, and they also have the right to monitor administrative processes, investigate, and come up with the recommendations. The Public Service Commission is accountable to the National Assembly, and they've got to report to the National Assembly annually on what they undertaken as the custodians of good governance and public administration in the Republic. And also, the major work of the Public Commission is to oversee and ensure that the principles and values espoused in the Constitution within public administration are adhered to.
Thank you very much. Member, there is Ms. Bukhatu, not for a grilling, but...
Mr. Bukhatu? Thank you. Are you familiar with the Public Service Commission Act? Can you tell us what it entails?
The Public Service Commission actually establishes the Public Service Commission as espoused in the Constitution. Briefly, what the Public Service Commission Act entails is the establishment of the Public Service Commission, the appointment of commissioners, the various commissioners at the national and provincial level, how they are appointed, what they've got to do as commissioners, the levels of commissioners, because it's stipulated that from the five commissioners who I mentioned, one will be the chairperson and the other will be the vice chairperson. And as alluded to, it establishes the monitoring, evaluation of public service, of the public service, overall public service. By the Public Service Commission, as well as the reporting lines of the Public Service Commission, as I alluded to, they've got to report to National Assembly. Also, it indicates the appointment, the appointment of the various commissioners differs, because those at National have got to be appointed by a committee constituted from the National Assembly, representative of all the political parties within the National Assembly, and those at provincial level are those recommended by the Premier of the province for appointment by the State President. Briefly, it is the appointment, establishment of the Commission, the appointment of commissioners, what the Commission is going to do, and what type of persons are going to be appointed as commissioners. And it also deals with the remuneration of commissioners, if would be determined from time to time by the president where the commission reports to, as well as what is it, I forget. A fiscal cover.
Okay. I think I'm very curious. After everything you see, you've worked for several departments. You've worked for housing, health, education, home affairs, and now legislature. What makes you go from department to department? Is it because you're a specialty, or what is it that you don't finish hardly 3 years in a department?
Thank you, ma'am. But if you look at my CV, you realize that at all of the departments I've been, I have stayed for 3 years. There's a minimum. Other than that, I have stayed for more than 3 years. But briefly, as I've alluded to, if you look at my CV, I went to university at a very late stage,
mm-hmm.
when I was at the Department of Education. Now, I was at the level of Chief Custodial Officer when I attained my honors degree in public administration. And I've been with the department from 1989 up to the end of 1998. Then it was time for me to grow as a person, not only as a person, but as a practitioner of the management sciences, especially public administration. And then that's why I was recruited by the Department of Health, where I stayed for the 3 years as a generalist. Growth again for me, recruited by the Office of the Director General, where I stayed at the Office of the Director General also for just over 3 years. And whilst I was at the Office of the Director General, I obtained my master's degree in development and administration. And I started being more attracted to both development and administration as a practitioner. And then I applied for the job at the Northwest Provincial Legislature. Now, you would want to know then why apply for the job of commissioner. I think basically what attracted me is the development, the administration part, you know, the monitoring and evaluation part, the research part, because it is as a spot in the Act, it is indicated that the Public Service Commission has got to operate in a fair and unbiased manner. And it has got to get the support of government departments and, you know, at all levels. And as an organ of state, there is no institution that is going to interfere with the work of the Public Service Commission. Now, it's more of a developmental stage for me as well, because I'm currently busy studying for my PhD degree with the University of South Africa. And the type of work involved, you know, the academic freedom, the research, I think that's what actually drawing me to the Public Service Commission.
I think I'm being curious. I thought maybe a special skill that the department wants from you. But with your experience working from department to department, all the various departments, you are able to tell us whether the public service is actually implementing the affirmative action, and also your understanding of affirmative action. You should be having experience in terms of working in the public department, dealing with the public service. Yes.
Well, let me start by defining my understanding what affirmative action is. Affirmative action is actually legislation that is aimed at addressing the imbalances of the past that were created by the apartheid era. And, you know, the creation of equal opportunities according to ability. And then I think that most of the departments are implementing affirmative action. But I'm going to be honest with you, Honorable Member, to indicate that there are instances where the good intentions of affirmative action are being reserved and misused, where people are appointed based on the color of their skin, where people are appointed based on who do you know, and also you'll pardon me for saying this, but there are some of the people who like to implement affirmative action in such a way that affirmative action should be seen to be a failure and not taking into consideration the good intentions of affirmative action. Yes, there are instances where affirmative action is being implemented, but there are those who implement it according to the goodwill and the intentions of the act. And there are those who are implementing it because they just have got to do it. Because we are facing a lot of challenges in the public service. You ask people about career passing in the public service, and basically, it's so difficult for one to get capabilities, structure career pathing in the public service, and then we start filling posts simply to comply with the numbers, which really doesn't occur well for the public service. But it's one of the problems endemic to public administration as a function and not as a science. Because even the imbalances of the past, you know, appointments in the public service were skewed. I mean, you had a public service that was dominated by what? The high echelon white male. The ranks that followed the high echelon, mainly female white.
What would you do to him if we were to take you to fill that gap or correct all the issues that you face?
If I may also add to the follow-up, that also, what do you think should be the role of the Public Service Commission in rectifying that shortcoming at the level of the
I think actually the role of the Public Service Commission would be to conduct research, you know, to say since the inception of the legislation, how far have we gone with the legislation? They look at the statistics, you know, interrogate the statistics and the numbers, and you know, interrogate as to whether the legislation as adopted really did achieve the good intentions, as I've already alluded to, of the legislation, and where there are gaps, it is actually the work of the Public Service Commission to come up with recommendations or to come up with ways of closing the gaps as identified. And if I am a successful candidate, the first thing that I'll go about is will be our departments complying. If they are complying, what are they doing right? And what are they doing right, or how are they continuing to enhance them? If they do not comply, why? And if, you know, there is a case for punitive measures to be taken, then as a commissioner, I would make those recommendations. And it actually comes to the question that I wanted to ask at the end of the interview, is whether what happens to the recommendations that the commission makes? You know, is there a way in which the commission makes a follow-up on their recommendations? If the recommendations are not implemented, why? And does the commission have the teeth to say, but we recommended 1, 2, 3, and it did not? Maybe Chairperson, that question will be answered at the end of the interview. But briefly, honorable member, to be succinct, one is to really go out there and investigate, do your research properly, and come up with the whys and don'ts and the recommendations of the whys and don'ts, as well as how to enhance the recommendations of those whys and don'ts.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. In reaction to the question of affirmative action asked by my colleague, you have not made any reference to the issue of disability. What is your attitude as far as that area of affirmative action is concerned? And secondly, would you, if you look at the public service administration, would you say that it has scored any successes in terms of looking at that issue of employing people with disabilities?
Actually, it is not only a question of disability, but it is a question of gender and disability across the whole spectrum. I don't think that the public service has made any milestones in that area. And I think the biggest hurdle is that the disabled people themselves are so politically conscientized that you start talking to a disabled person, in the first instance, to be politically correct, you don't know what to call that person. Because then those who say, no, we are not disabled, we are people with disabilities, you know, and all the terminology that we get. But over and above that, I think that the first hurdle that we are facing as a public administration is to make our workplaces and workstations user-friendly for people with disabilities. I mean, I'm not a provincial legislature. I know the hurdles that we're facing when we're out at public hearings, you know, to make the places accessible to people like people who are on wheelchairs, you know, to make provision for the deaf and dumb, you know, sign language. I think we haven't really addressed fully the issue of disability and gender in the public sphere. Because you look at the numbers and the statistics, what you realize is that most of the departments, and I put my head on the block to say that most of the departments would hire a blind person, and what does the person do? Switchboard operator. And that's the end of the story. Succinctly, that's the answer.
No. I'm satisfied. I don't ask expert, you know. Sometimes
they put you on the shelf.
Except
your respect. Rebel, you have mentioned reports that are being issued by the Public Service Commission earlier. And in your view, if you were to evaluate them in terms of importance and actually making a difference in the public service, which reports do you think are more important? Well, I suppose they are all important, but more important in terms of really making a positive difference in the public service.
I think the reports that to me would be of utmost importance would be those to address the imbalance of the past. But without, you know, not taking into consideration what the Public Service Commission is set out to do, because it's a lot of work actually that the Public Service Commission is set out to do.
With your experience in the public service and, you know, the different positions that you have held, what is it that sets you apart that will enable you to really make a difference in the Public Service Commission?
Firstly, I would like to indicate to the panel that I'm hardworking. I'm innovative. I'm a strategist in approach, and I'm a good team player because I know that I can't achieve everything all by myself. Actually, that's what makes me to rise in the public sector.
If I may follow up on that one, I'm really excited about the innovative part. Can you share with us what is it that you have contributed in terms of innovation during your time in the public sector?
When I started looking for the Department of Home Affairs, unfortunately, it was during the apartheid era. But I was innovative in the sense that, you know, there was that gap between us. It was a question of us and them, you know, the black and the white. And I'm blessed because, to a certain degree, I'm also very good in Afrikaans, so I could bridge the gap between the two. And then when I worked for the Department of Education, I made a very good impact because of, you know, actually a newly established region, the then Diamond Field region. And within a period of 9 months, we were voted as the best in terms of conditions of service with the then KwaZulu-Natal Department of Education. And when I arrived at the Department of Health, Rustenburg, the district office, they were the then Mputatswana, and their systems were very much outdated. And I started developing policies, coming up with systems, what I learned previously from the then South African Public Service. I may also mention that before I left the Department of Education, during the integration, I actually led the personnel corps of the then Department of Education training during the integration in the Northwest Province. And we developed the provincial bazaar committee, I mean the provincial bazaar of the Northwest Province. And also as for former guidelines. And I think one of the biggest impacts that I made was that when we developed the provincial bazaar, I stood out among the rest to indicate that we must move away from the way things used to be, because, you know, bazaaries are according to teachers to go and study what Setswana, African,
biblical
studies, and they've been taken there in droves, and they come out of there, most of them, what do they do? And we had a public service that was overbloated by underqualified teachers. I mean, there were those teachers who were still teaching with standard 6. And it was a question of, how do we redress that? Isn't it better that we shouldn't only pump funds into getting numbers, but what about looking at the past and say, how do we improve the qualifications of these teachers and so forth? And I served in the Provincial Bazaar Committee from 1995 until I left the department in 1998. And then at the Department of Health, I mean, I went up, you know, procedure manual for the employment, induction, employee assistance, it was before it was called employee awareness. You know, I came up with some of those policies until I went to national office.
Thank you very much. Now, what do you consider to be the major challenge that is facing the Public Service Commission now, and how do you think that challenge needs to be addressed?
Madam Secretary, I think that the biggest challenge that is facing the Public Service Commission is to say that, has the Commission made a difference? I think that's what they need to prove now. That's what I think. Do we have the Commission made a difference?
Through research? how do you think the best would be?
Yeah, the best would be research, because you can't just really take information. It has to be supported by evidence. You know, it has to be scientifically proven that it answers the question in the mind of the researcher or the questioner.
Thank you very much.
Before I'm going to ask him a question out. Where is the mic on? Let me put the mic on.
Okay.
I tell you tomorrow.
Okay. I want to go back to the question that you wanted to ask. But before I respond, I would like to ask you a question regarding that. I mean, the fact that the commission only has a recommending power and not enforcing power, do you consider that to be a strength or a weakness? As far as the public commission is concerned,
it's a difficult question. it's a difficult question, because it's a strength in the sense that they are there, they do the work, and they can alert senior office bearers in the public sector. But as to whether it is a weakness, I do not know, because I don't know as to whether, you know, there are recommendations, and then they've got the power to enforce the recommendations. But the literature that I've gone through doesn't show any sign that they really have the power to enforce. And that is why I wanted to ask a question at the end of the question, Madam Chair, because would it really make sense for one to work all the way? Because I think the government is pumping a lot of money in the public sector commission, and if their recommendations are not taken into consideration, why then should it exist?
Honorable Colonel, you want to take it?
No.
Okay. Then, if I meant to answer, then no, or attempt to answer your question, the public service commission actually does not have the enforcing power. I don't want to refer to it as toothless, but it can only recommend and that's it. So as this portfolio committee, this is one of the challenges that are facing us. How do we go about to make sure that the recommendations that are made by the Public Service Commission are actually being followed up and implemented, seeing that the commission does not have the authority to do so? And if you are to be appointed, we will really look up to you in the commission to also work together with us to find ways of ensuring that those recommendations are actually being taken seriously and implemented, and do bring, you know, a difference in the operations of the public sector. I hope I've answered your question. Any other question from me?
No. I don't know what is the answer before I make a decision.
Yes, the fact that now I'm giving you an opportunity, we have exhausted questions on our side.
Yeah.
Yes, no, Madam Chair, I'll just like to take this opportunity to thank the panel for having invited me for the interview. Even if I'm not the successful candidate, but the mere fact that I was invited said that the panel saw some capabilities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rebukazi. Thank you. We really appreciate the interest that you have shown in serving the Public Service Commission, and we wish you all of the best. You will definitely be informed before the end of this day about the outcome of the interview. And in the meantime, we wish you all the best in what you are doing and what you will be doing in future.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank
you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank
you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
I don't know where the ladies are. I haven't seen them this morning.
Okay, I didn't say to you, you talk about interrogation. How come the two of you ask at the same time a question? That is interrogation. This is what the Buddha did in apartheid. Two of them, one saying the side, one saying the side, you know, model.
No,
they
no,
both
no.
Ask a question.
No, it was a question.
No.
Come on. It will be my last time at 11:30. If he comes earlier, it would do it, but I think if you break for tea, I'm expecting somebody at 11. I have to meet with someone at 11, so I would suggest that we start after that. So for now, we can have a tea break. Good morning, sir. Morning, Advocate Malasela.
Morning.
And welcome.
Thank you.
We really appreciate your coming for this interview. We know you are busy with constituency work. You had to abandon them to be here. We really appreciate that. My name is Jane Masumela. I suppose you know me very well. And I'm the chairperson of this committee. I have with me Honorable Yulis from the DA. And Honorable Chwete from the ANC, as well as Honorable Babaza from the ANC. We will be asking you some questions, not with the intention of grilling you, but we just want to get the best from you. We have looked at your documents, but we thought it would be appropriate and to give us more information if we were to talk to you directly. So please don't feel intimidated. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. Just as a kick-off, we know you as our colleague in the National Assembly, and like I said, we have looked at your CV and the documents that you have sent, but now that you are here, why don't you tell us in a minute or two your experience, especially in terms of the public service and any other managerial positions that you have held, either in the public service or anywhere else. Just in a minute or two. And of course, we'd like to know where you come from.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And I say one would have mixed feelings as a preamble to answering your question when you have appeared for your colleagues and talked to them about yourself. But I think that is part and parcel of what President Masumela intends. The Pretoria High Court in around 2000, if I'm not mistaken, accepted my application to get to be admitted as an advocate as part and parcel of one ability to contribute to the development of the county. Prior to that, I once worked at a junior level in the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development as a labor court judges associate, which was a very interesting development in my skills acquisition, but so also as an exposure to what public service entails, particularly because the services that have been rendered by the judiciary has a serious impact in the lives of quite a number of people. That was my first interaction with public service in general. And I must say it was interesting working with judges of the caliber that I attended. Then I came to Parliament 2002, and that was a further advancement of my relation with public service, in the sense that I had to take a responsibility of keeping public service committees in check in relation to what departments, let me not say, in relation to the work that they do. So those two instances serve as a an exposition of my intention with public service. In summary, I'll continue to talk to you about myself in relation to observations that I made.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Could you then briefly just tell us what your understanding is about the functions, what you understand to be the functions of the Public Service Commission?
Let me say as a prelude that when I came here, as I walked through the city of Parliament, I realized that our flags were flying half-mast. And to me, that was something that invigorated my interest. That's when I remembered that Mrs. Miriam Makeba is passed on. And in a simple interpretation of what this means for me was that this is an indication of a government which necessarily shows its compassion. Now, when you then have to look at the Public Service Commission, it's an important institution in the sense that it keeps the checks and balances of public service in totality. More so that it's enshrined in the Constitution. It's such an institution, therefore, that it's not necessarily just an afterthought. When you look at the key principles that relate to what the Public Service Commission should look at in assessing the public service in general, those are very important principles. And yes, between the time that the Public Service Commission Act was promulgated up to date, there's been quite a number of important reports that the Commission has issued out, tabled in Parliament, discussed within the corridors of Parliament. And when you look at the composition of the Public Service Commission itself and the kind of reports that it's able to produce, you realize a lot of qualitative work that went to the kind of work that they did in doing those kind of statistical assessments, either of departments nationally and provincially. So my understanding of the Public Service Commission is that this is an important institution that keeps an oversight or plays an oversight role on public service in general. To that extent, it has made recommendations about things that it has been able to interact with in terms of reports. And the most important aspect is how far has there been compliance with recommendations that were made by the Public Service Commission. There's been proposals by some quarters that there's a need to reduce the capacity of the Public Service Commission, in particular of the commission. Well, my view is different in the sense that when you look at the centralized and decentralized nature of the South African Public Service and the role that provincial departments play in helping with the service provision aspect of our government, I would argue that it cannot therefore mean that the reduction of commissioners in the Public Service Commission would necessarily entail that you are playing a critical role in making sure that you align the Public Service Commission. Some of those proposals are contained in the report that was done by Professor Karasmal on the overview of the Chapter 9 institution. Yes, outside of that kind of an assessment, he makes an important aspect alluding to the fact that this is one institution that has played its role effectively, efficiently, without any compromise, and he gave it accolades. That's a simple narration of my understanding of the Public Service Commission.
Thank you very much. And having said that, I just want to get your assessment of the performance of the Commission. Do you think it is performing efficiently on its mandate? Why do you think so? Or are there any shortcomings in the way they perform their duty?
The Public Service Commission, to me, is a commission of excellence. When you look at the medium-term strategic plan, in the medium-term period, you realize that there's been a steady increase in the allocations of funds by the National Treasury to the Public Service Commission in the three financial years that will be coming up to 2011. Firstly, to me, that's an acknowledgement of the work that the Commission does in relation to playing its oversight role in the public on the public service. Secondly, when you look at the accounting reporting about how they use their files that have been appropriated over the years in each financial year, you would realize that there hasn't been extreme over expenditure or under expenditure. Even without having to use the word extreme, you don't have incidences of over and under expenditure. You don't have, from the Auditor General's report, qualified reports that relate to the Public Service Commission. Those are simple, important aspects for me that determine the efficiency of an institution like the Public Service Commission. In that instance, when an institution can be able to excel in financial management, I take a very serious view of that institution. Secondly, if there would have been shortcomings, the shortcomings of the Public Service Commission would not necessarily be internal. That is my submission. They are external. What do I mean? When you look at the constitutional mandate of the Public Service Commission, it's an oversight, or it plays an oversight role in the public service. Do you have other institutions outside of the public service that can, in one way or the other, complement the work of the Public Service Commission? Yes. You talk of the Auditor General, you talk of National Treasury. Interestingly, you talk of Parliament, you talk of provincial legislature. When you look at the reports that have been tabled by the Public Service Commission, the 2008 SOP report, which is an analysis of this 5-year term of the present government, they made interesting findings, of course, which have been consistent with other reports that they produced. But more interestingly, they talk to the fact that there are departments in government which have been getting qualified reports in a period of 4 years successfully or consecutively. They pose the question, if this trend has been observed, what has been done about it? Who was called to account about it? If this trend has been observed, whose role was it that this trend must be, in one or the other, be cured? Now, to me, that is a commission which says we have been able to do our work in relation to making a continuous analysis and assessment of public service. Yet, to a large extent, we also need somebody to be able to augment our oversight role and our oversight responsibilities. And in a situation where there are institutions which have powers, of course, not necessarily similar to us, but which complement one another, what becomes the role of those institutions in complementing our responsibilities as a public commission? to me is an outcry. If there's been levels of irregular expenditures and unbudgeted for expenditures within this medium term, what is happening with the executive authorities that are responsible for those departments? That is an external feature that I think it counts negatively for the commission, because I personally think, to a large extent, there has to be a paradigm shift in relation to institutions that play oversight role, particularly for the department, because I know it. In the sense that, in a situation where you have a commission with a minute kind of employees like the Public Service Commission, there are not even 500 as employees in totality, which is able to do a sampling and use methodologies that it has been able to apply, for example, in determining the performance of managers, in determining the compliance of HODs in relation to their performance agreements, in determining the relationship, the citizen survey, for example, that is done in other provinces, in determining the kind of relations that can be there between labor and the employer, and tabling those kind of reports, amongst others. A citizen satisfaction survey, which to me says, let's get the public to understand what it means to be a South African analyst. Table all of this. And you still have a recurrence of unwarranted irregular expenditures. You still have a recurrence of qualified reports consecutively for 4 years. You still have a recurrence of HODs who can't simply submit a performance agreement or sign a performance assessment and logic with the PSC. That says we must do something about our oversight responsibility. And without saying Parliament is not playing a particular role, but I'm saying that there has to be a paradigm shift in Parliament in relation to our oversight. When you come as a commissioner in the Public Service Commission, or when you come as a deputy chief director or whatever, or as a director, and say, Parliament, this is our report, this is our product in this financial year in relation to how we look at the public service. And Advocate Malashana simply says to you, what do you think I must? When this person has an oversight responsibility, and to a larger extent, this person is an alpha and omega of performance outside of yourself as a public service commission. To me, I think that's wiser. So I think to a larger extent, the Public Service Commission, to me, has done very well. But what counts negatively against the Public Service Commission is other institutions that would help augment the oversight responsibility. In conclusion, it has also made important assessments that whilst we are saying that departments should work not in silos, but in tandem with one intergovernmental relations between departments. As the Public Service Commission, we also signed memorandum of understanding with other institutions, the Public Protector, for example, the National Treasury, for example, the Auditor General, as a way of then saying whatever that we do should not necessarily duplicate the functions that we have to do. That in itself says, The commission works at home.
On that note, I'll give you any questions. On that note, Advocate, the fact that the commission only has recommending power and does not have recommending authority, do you consider that to be a strength or a weakness on the part of the commission?
I don't consider it to be a weakness, in the sense that without belaboring the point, you would have legislative frameworks that to a large extent must also play a critical role in determining the performance of the public service. You have the Public Finance Management Act, for example, which has been tailor-made to make sure that accounting standards in the public service are streamlined, for example. You just had a situation where Parliament passed a bill which was necessary to deal with the procedure to amend the budget, which for me was an important oversight too. Now, to the extent that, for example, we have this kind of tools that are necessarily part and parcel of our discourse, I think that would not necessarily count against or be said to be a weakness from my own observation. It would have been a weakness if it has been found that outside of this power that it has, the public service is not also performing optimally. But when you look at the purpose, the ways and means through which the performance of the public service can be judged, I wouldn't say it's a weakness. What I would say is a weakness is the inability of ourselves as South Africans to also use other mechanisms of oversight that I have talked to. I bumped on something that relates to the kind of recommendations that the Public Service Commission made. And quite a number of the recommendations that they made relating to the performance of employees inside were adopted. For example, recently there's been, I think if I'm not mistaken, an amendment of the regulations in the public service that then said no HODs are going to get performance bonuses for as long as, one, they might not have been assessed, two, they might not have filled their performance agreements and so on and so forth. Which to me says that is an important step in then saying the kind of recommendations that have been made by the commission plays an important role when they are implemented. And it is neither here nor there that you can say generally there have not been implementation of the recommendation of the Public Service Commission. There is an impending single public service bill that will possibly be discussed or tabled in Parliament next year. Quite a number of anomalies that the Public Service Commission has responded on, I personally think to a large extent that would also be addressed by that bill. It's only a matter of time as to when would that bill be placed before Parliament. For example, for over this year, the Public Service Commission has not been doing enough work in terms of looking at local government. Of course, it was not their mandate. But with that impending bill coming, you are sure that there will be a serious streamlining of what is public service in a single regulated framework. So there's executive authority, and I think it becomes the role of executive authority to then say what that which has been recommended. We as the executive authority have a role to play in making sure that we finalize. And I think that is complementary. Yes.
Thank you, Honourable
Member. Honourable Member, if I listen to you correctly, what you're saying is the public service commissioners, they in fact they are doing a good job, unqualified audit reports. You say they are reporting on certain issues, corruption, whatever, personnel and everything, all of those. You say they do a good job, that's what you're saying. Now, if then you say somehow whatever they report doesn't go any further than reporting, if I listen to you correctly. Now, as the representative of Parliament, this committee, Public Service Commission, Public Service and Administration Committee, they report directly to us on their findings. So, my question to you is, Member,
Do you think that this committee is a legitimate committee to execute the recommendations of the Public Service Commissioners lay before us? Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable. Let me first clarify this misunderstanding, which would then put my answering in proper context. I did not say reports that are tabled by the Public Service Commission do not go any further than reporting. Before you asked the question, I was still alluding to the kind of recommendations that were made by the Public Service Commission and were adopted, for example, in relation to HODs and senior managers. Now, that then says, outside of having said the Public Service Commission plays a better role in terms of my own observation, that tabling does not necessarily just go for as far as tabling. There are a number of mechanisms that have been taken or put in place to make sure that which has been tabled is processed. The only difference is the processing is not 100%. Coming to your question, a very interesting question, which I think what I'll give you are my views. Firstly, the Public Service Portfolio Committee plays a critical role in terms of their relationship with the Public Service Commission. The Public Service Commission consistently talks about not just an ordinary support, but joint ventures that they took with this committee in doing some oversight work or in relation as well to some of the work that the Public Service Commission does. In that instance, this committee is an important committee to oversee the work of the Public Service Commission. Because remember, the Public Service Commission is an independent institution. It accounts to Parliament. Mechanisms through which the Commission must account to Parliament should be through portfolio committees, and this is one of them. Having said that, I'm then saying, is it not time that we should also advocate for a paradigm shift in the institution, in terms of the way in which or the manner in which our rules as Parliament are structured to enable us to play the important role that this committee plays? One, there's a standing committee on public accounts. There's a committee on the Auditor General. There's a Public Service and Administration Portfolio Committee. What is the work of this? What has been the work of the portfolio committees over the years? What has been a synergy in terms of oversight responsibility between these committees? When regards to this fact that all of them collectively deal with one aspect, public service, in its entirety, when you would have other portfolio committees dealing with public service in accordance with the right function. To an extent that you would, and I think the committee has also done a splendid job in terms of making sure that, for example, when the Public Service Amendment Bill was introduced and debated, there was an invitation to some chairpersons who would possibly be affected by the bill itself. The question is, should that not, even though it's regulated within the rules, but it should not be made a rule that is standing, that amongst others, when portfolio committees report, they should also report on the interrelations between themselves and other portfolio committees. Because one of the problems that I personally observe is that, before I talk about what I've observed, SCOPA would go to the Public Service Commission and then say, would request that you do an audit for us in relation to payment of bonuses and so on and so forth. That would be on the basis of what SCOPA would have got when they do oversight work. But is there a synergy between that which SCOPA would say and that which would be the Public Service Portfolio Committee in relation to the understanding of the resources in the PS? If there's no that synergy, that is why you'd have a situation where, to a large extent, of course, it's an appreciation of goodwill that has been done. The PSC would be requested to do all of this other thing. But you might find that if at a stage where there was a lot of synergy within portfolio committees in Parliament, there would have been a situation where there would possibly be, between chairpersons and committees and so on and so forth, a kind of a joint program which relates to nothing else but the oversight tools that we have, all of us as committees. Now, once your members proposed, I think you'd agree that the portfolio committee meetings are public, so it's not a secret. One of your members proposed that maybe there should be a standing committee on public administration. And I think that is one other aspect that you need to pursue, or we need to pursue. Because when you sit down and look at what the portfolio committee does, it deals with oversight in line with a line responsibility, which is the Department of Public Services and Administration. But the question is, do we have a correct conceptualization of what is public service? Well, if my assertion is, if we have a correct conceptualization of what is public service, outside of that which is scope at us, this committee should also be in a position to do that. So then say, from a point of view of proper human resource management within your department, executive authority, and the chief financial officer, your HODs have not been submitting their performance agreement. Can you account on that? So that to me would then say, let's build synergy between portfolio committees. But that does not necessarily mean that this portfolio committee is not playing a critical role. It does. The problem is our conceptualization of what is public service. Because I also think that what the judiciary does, outside of the fact that they're not part of the public service, but it's public service, based on my experience. If you go to court, your case is prosecuted, and then you wait for a judgment from the judge. It takes 6 months for a judge to give you a judgment. That is not public service within the efforts that are espoused by the Constitution. I'm just citing that as an example from my own experience. Besides that, where would have a paradigm shift in relation to our conceptualization of public service? You would then have this committee also interacting with the Committee of Justice and Constitutional Development, and then say, let's interact on the basis of this that we got as a survey by the Public Service Commission, or what the Auditor General or SCOPE has been saying, and talk to us about why did you get an audit, a qualified audit. So, yeah, the committee plays a critical role, I agree, but I still think that a conceptualization of public service would see this committee not necessarily just taking oversight responsibility on a line function, the Department of Public Service and Administration. Its oversight responsibility must be concurrent.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Another matter?
Can I just start by praising? I thought my phone was off. Mr. Mbashela, I know that you do have this experience of reading or listening to the media criticizing public service because they always talk about corruption in the public service. And sometimes it is true, because I read recently that in the KZN and Eastern Cape, there are millions of them in the Department of Social Development, which is discovered by, it was reported by the Minister of Social Development. In case you become one or become the Public Service Commissioner, what would you do to fight this and make sure that we don't have this kind of support in the department? The second question, am I allowed to be asked two questions? Thank you, Chair. The second question is, you are a colleague and you know that women always fight affirmative action. And in my experience of being in the several committees, when the departments come to report, I always see among people that are coming to report to committees, many of them are men. And you'll find that women and people with disabilities are not many. And what is your view in terms of affirmative action in the public service? And also, what would you do, if yes or no, what would be your view in the implementation of the affirmative action? Thank you.
Chair, can I say, if you allow me, thank Honorable Chuet, and I must also say thank Honorable Ellis, so that it should, it should not be that there are people that thank and other members of the
panel
that you don't thank, and thank Chairperson as well. Can I get a clarification on the first question? It speaks to corruption, the reporting of the media. If there can just be a clarification of whether I should answer it straight as it is. To understand you to be saying I must speak on what you might term a negative media publicity or media reporting and corruption in the public service. And KZN and Eastern Cape are used as examples.
Mm.
Is that a correct conceptualization? Let me start with the with the last, I believe that there are two questions.
Mm.
When the Canadians came to South Africa to help South Africa align its public service, benchmarking it against international parameters. One of the aspects that was considered, of course, was affirmative action. The basis of which has been guiding the Public Service Commission to report on representativity within the public service. Unfortunately, We've made important strides, yes, in affirming quite a number of abled women, abled not in the context of body, but who are better qualified and are able to understand the role that they're supposed to play. We haven't done enough. That is also contained in an analysis of the public service. Because at senior management level, there's a serious disparity of women representation, and that serious disparity still needs to be addressed. The addressing of which I personally believe should not necessarily just take a straight jacketed approach, because if at for all intents and purposes, we then say we affirm people on the basis of that they fit within this requirement. We tend to overemphasize certification over education. Because to me, those are two different things. You might have certificates like Honorable Malakela has, and you might find that Honorable Malakela. So, one of the aspects that I think should be looked into very seriously, based on what an assessment of the public service has been, that at middle management level, there are people who have been prepared and consistently to be exposed to senior management services or development to an extent that they can also be given those positions. The question is as well, how many of those still within those middle management positions are women? And I think if we cannot at times take a deliberate attitude to then say, without of course compromising that which would be quality, let's take serious observations and make sure that we give support to our women folk and make sure that all of them can be affected to senior management services or levels. And in interacting with anything that relates to politics, I haven't bumped on a reporter and say there's a serious problem in relation to affirmation of women or their capacity to implement sustained. That is why when you look at the Department of Public Service as a report, they also talk about gender mainstreaming. But to an extent that we can take decisions and not implement them, it's one thing that I think needs also to be looked at very seriously. So the empowerment of women, Samara Machel wrote that it should not just be a compassionate attitude. It should not just be because they are women, therefore they must be affirmed. It must be every task of pardon me for using this word, of a revolution. Unfortunately, again, you have a problem in the public service in relation to people with disabilities, and that is worrisome for me as a South African. That in a public service where there are about 1.2 to 3 million public servants, the only people with disability would be around 2,100. Is there a relationship between that which we espouse as a nation, as a government that we are get at achieving, and that which we do in practical terms? I think we've been found one thing. But the Public Service Commission, of which I have applied to be a commissioner, recommends that there be a database of people with disability in South Africa, which database would include, amongst other things, their qualifications, the kind of skills that they have outside of their certification. Let there be a serious interrelation or interaction between the public service and organizations representing people with disability. So that at any given stage, at any time one would sit and say, we need to affirm people and or employ people with disability. We don't have to run helter skelter for shelter looking for people when we can actually sit down and think, this is the database, this is the source from which we can get people with disability. For me, that's an important recommendation and it only needs to be implemented. The reason for the recommendation, amongst others, is also that people with disabilities have also not been applying for jobs that are advertised. The inference might be because of the stigmatization that comes around and the attitude of the public service in relation to how they then relate with people with disabilities. For example, I've went to school with people with disabilities. Most of them have to. Most of them are sharp, unfortunately up to date. All of them are still concentrated at institutions where they were educated, institutions that were specifically designed for them. And for me, it's just great. My wife is partially sighted, and that makes me understand the compassionate plea of people with disability to say we are also. One day, one of the people that I went to school with phoned on the 27th of April. I can't remember that year. When Radio Metro was saying, "Tell us your experience about democracy in South Africa. Talk to us about how you feel." I would say that was a citizen survey of Metro. She said, "There's nothing to take home. There's nothing to talk about in relation to this democracy because I'm qualified. I'm educated." And I don't think that I cannot be able to play a critical role in the public service in South Africa. But yet, here I am. And that in itself raised a lot of eyebrows about the attitude that we have taken as government.
Of course.
With all of the nice things that we have said we are going to put in place. The Public Service Commission report also notes that it might possibly be, it's an inference, it might possibly be that the employment of people with disability compels the employer to do a lot of restructuring, building works, wise, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And that should not necessarily be an adverse aspect that would then say you can't employ people with disability. When I was still a consultant at PricewaterhouseCoopers, there were three or four people with disability who were affected in different ways. Yet they made sure that they could restructure, of course, PricewaterhouseCoopers has a lot of money. They could restructure their buildings in such a way that it could accommodate people with disability. And at that point, because I was a labor consultant, there was a lot of talk about how possible is it that government can come up with these nice things about employing people with disability, but it is the worst performer in that regard. So I think all is not lost. The recommendations as made by the PSA, I think they can go a long way in making sure that we start addressing the issue that you raised,
Honorable
Chair.
Corruption.
I'm thinking of how to deal with it, simply because of one thing. Perception is that there's serious corruption in Eastern Cape. Whether it's real or manifested, I don't know. Yes, there might be justifiable reports that there's that problem. Yet Eastern Cape has been one of the best performing provinces in terms of following up corruption cases that are reported by the National Anti-Corruption Hotline. To me, that then makes a wake-up call. If this province is said to be perceived to be corrupt, reported as such, who then is reporting about or giving feedback to the Public Service Commission about these issues that are reported in this case? Because generally that person is also supposed to be corrupt, not necessarily reporting to the Public Service Commission about incidents that have been reported. It's an interesting anomaly. Yes, we've done well as a nation in terms of dealing with corruption. There are still pockets of problems here and there. There generally is a problem of sensationalization, I would say it with sufficient certainty. Because I've always looked at media reports in relation to an assessment of the PSC. There's an element of sensationalization, of taking one aspect that which is related to corruption, blowing it out of proportion to such an extent that it would appear as if generally the corruption is the lifeblood of public service in South Africa. Measures have been put in place, of course, the National Anti-Corruption Hotline and so on and so forth, the National Anti-Corruption Program. And I think the only problem that needs to be addressed is how do departments follow up on or in relation to issues that have been reported to them, investigating corrupt-related activities that are reported within their department. That is a weakness that is still there. But I don't think that witness necessarily says that we're not doing well in addressing the problem of corruption. And to an extent that it has been reported through different TOPS reports, that the different audits that were done by the Public Service Commission, they found out that there's no proper alignment between departments in relation to dealing with corruption. But generally, this is one aspect that I think we are doing well on it. Of course, there still needs to be a lot of effort put in place, depending on how do we then streamline all of these departments to have people who can be able to investigate corruption-related matters with these departments. I hope I've answered your question.
Yes, thank you.
Honorable
Father?
Okay.
Honourable Member, this is a 5-year contract.
Yeah.
If you should be given this profession, how long will you need to give notice in Parliament?
That's very important question, or interesting question about Julius. On a lighter note, on a lighter note, and this should not be used against me in judging my performance. On a lighter note, I'm told that on Tuesday, the Mosaneke Commission's report will be implemented and tenants will be
effective. Thank you.
So if it happens that Honorable Ulysses recommends me to be a commissioner, I can give not less than 2 weeks notice, just on the basis that the Mosaneke Commission.
Okay.
but yes, on a serious note, I still have to interact with. I'm talking as if you're foreign consent, but I think I would definitely, as you know, that we more are responsible to our political parties. That would also emanate from what my political party would say. Also what the president, when would the president assent to the proposal is made, because I must tell you that when you are already exposed to institutions such as Parliament, it's not just a simple decision to close your eyes and say I'm leaving. There are a lot of emotional issues that include that, but so also let me say that I would be interested on involved in my political party, and then on human resource processes that would be taken care of. And yeah, I hope you will consider that.
Yeah, honourable chair, and then honourable chair, this is my last question. I've listened to you talking about giving answers to affirmative action and corruption, and I was sitting here thinking, what is the major challenge, the biggest major challenge facing a public service commission? What do you think is the biggest challenge? Thank you.
In relation to affirmative action and corruption?
Yes.
I'm not belaboring the point, but I still maintain that the biggest challenge that faces the PSC is external. The Public Service Commission is the secretariat to the National Anti-Corruption Hotline. Whatever that comes through the Anti-Corruption Hotline is sent or dispatched to departments to respond. Now, outside of the Public Service Commission as an institution, the non-compliance or non-investigative processes by the department hampers on the Public Service Commission's ability to deal with issues as such. You mentioned cases earlier on in your question. One of the audits done was that there were issues related to corruption that were forwarded to KZN, emanating from departments of the province. It took almost 6 months just for that process to be initiated or cases to be investigated. What is the problem? To a large extent, the problem is the investigative capacity of departments and mechanisms that they've put in place to make sure that they employ people who deal specifically with investigative issues as such. So that to me still remains a challenge to the Public Service Commission itself, because it also impacts negatively on the perception of corruption in society. That when people would use the National Anti-Corruption Hotline, yet issues that they deal with through the National Anti-Corruption Hotline are not followed up expediently. It gives a picture that, well, government is not necessarily serious about. Therefore, there's no need for me to continue to do that. That is a very serious challenge, because it can also threaten the efficacy of of the anti-corruption hotline itself, which is managed in this proper fashion. Now, another serious challenge, of course, is still external of expenditures that are wayward, wherein employees also embezzled funds through mechanisms that would be seen as providing services. But when we look at that, it's an irregular expenditure. The problem is, what do we do to recoup the money that are spent irregularly in this fashion? That is another challenge of the Public Service Commission, because that impacts negatively on the fiscal and the national revenue fund, which should be used necessarily to disperse funds to different departments. I don't think all this doom and gloom in relation to affirmative action is only a question of to what extent and how far do we hold departments to account in relation to make sure that they are fair, either people with disability and or women, and people from historically disadvantaged backgrounds. Yet one of the problems that was identified was the human resource element of our public service, where I think in 2008 only one department was able to fill its entire positions within the period of 30 days as recommended by the PSC. All of these other departments could not be able to do that. Well, there are different reasons that are cited. But to an extent that this has been a recurring decimal, I think there should be a way through which those aspects are, or that red tape in relation to advertisement, employment, decision to take who as this and who as whatever employee, should be fast tracked. Because the situation where we talk about a skills deficit, yet the vacancy rate within the department or within the public service generally is such at an alarming rate, and it's not necessarily on leadership related positions. It's something that also it's a threat to the Public Service Commission, but as I've said, it's external. An internal threat, Chester and my apology, when you're a politician and you're given an opportunity to speak without being confined to minutes like in the National Assembly, you tend to forget. A threat that I personally think is internal to the Public Service Commission is the attractiveness of the commission, which then demands of institutions to want the services of the commission. That to me is a threat, because it then says, to what extent are we then going to realign that which the Public Service Commission has as capacity? And that which the Public Service Commission is required to do, either through SCOPA, either through yourselves in some of the committee decisions that you took, either through the executive authority and cabinet and so on and so forth. Now, that in itself says, is an aspect that needs to be looked into. Whether pumping of money to deal with that threat in terms of expenditures would alleviate the problem, or an alignment of institutions like the Public Service Commission that continues to give that kind of services. Why am I saying this right? There is a coordination of the African Association or Association of African Public Service Commission, which is being engineered by the Public Service Commission. That is the first point. The moment that it takes effect, it would then say that the attractiveness of the Public Service Commission would no longer be confined within the borders of South Africa. Already, I think Somali, Sudan, if I'm not mistaken, Sudan has also requested the assistance of the Public Service Commission. That is the first point. From a cabinet point of view and the pronouncements of the presidency, there is move to fast track the integration of SADC first and foremost. An integration of a region does not necessarily just say, as long as we can agree that your passports and visas are no longer needed to cross over, it's finished and done. It then says, in relation to whatever programs that we have defined for ourselves as governments within this region, our ability to implement those programs, amongst others, the Millennium Development Goals, is dependent upon the kind of a public service we have. That in itself is also put as a threat to the Public Service Commission in the sense that it would be required then to also interact with institutions or governments outside of the borders of the Republic of South Africa to have capacity. The other aspect that I think should also be looked into, coming to the borders of South Africa, to what extent would these employees of the Public Service Commission who continuously do their work with vigor, zest and zeal not ultimately be discouraged when some of the work that they put in place and say, this is what you must look at. It's not necessary. Action is not necessarily taken on it. It's one thing to, I did not do statistics accordingly, but I just papered over it. When you look at the report that the Public Service Commission produces, they don't just immediately rush into explaining to you what is the report all about. They'll speak to you about the scope of whatever, if it's an audit done, the methodology applied, and so on and so forth. The challenge is related to the scope of the methodology we used to determine whatever findings we arrived at. That is not a desktop analysis. It actually entails that a person must sit down, for example, and write a questionnaire in such a way that it would be delivered at the time that it's supposed to be delivered. They would wait for those questionnaires to come back. They would look at those questionnaires. They would interact with people who necessarily might have filled in those questionnaires and so on and so forth. Of course, that is the line function. But in a situation where that kind of a detailed work is done by just one employee, yet when you look at the results in relation to the recommendation, there's only a minute kind of a response by either the executive authority or the oversight institution. To what extent can that also lead to turnovers within the department, or the Public Service Commission itself, by employees who would ultimately say, our work is not appreciated? Or conversely, to what extent can it just lead to employees of the Public Service Commission just doing audit for audit's own sake? That is a very serious threat that I think we need to look at. And in one of the reports of 2008, and to me that was wiser, that the President of the Republic of South Africa would have to, in a State of the Nation address, speak about a simple thing of non-compliance. I'm saying it's simple, underlined. Non-compliance of senior management in terms of their performance, their agreement, or their assessment tools. Now, to them, that is not what necessarily what the president should be engaging in giving the direction to the government. But it then the level of non-compliance is such that it has reached alarming proportions that the president could give it as part of his State of the Nation address. Now, those kind of aspects do have an impact on the morale of the staff that continuously deal with this thing. So that is what I see as a challenge and as a threat to the Public Service Commission. The threats that I've mentioned earlier on would not necessarily lead to the collapse of the commission, but I think that is one aspect that we should necessarily be proud of. Among others, that the Mo Ibrahim Institute Index on African governance has put South Africa on the fifth spot, I think after Mauritius, Seychelles, Botswana, and Cape Verde. When you consider that South Africa is only 14 years into democracy, you then realize that this is an important milestone. Well, I personally would have thought that there would be Tanzania, there would be this other. Now, the most important question is, to an extent that institute of that nature can be able to benchmark South Africa among the best, what would then be the challenges of institutions like the PSC in relation to dealing with our African counterparts? Some of them is not a question of technical expertise. Zimbabwe is the case in point. At a time when we sit down and agree that the morass in Zimbabwe is finished, you would need to still come back and say this is a public service that needs to be realigned. Which is the best neighbor that you can go to? Thank you.
Thank you, Chapter 3. Honorable Mr. The PSC is also involved in district resolution processes, at least internally. How do you rate its performance in this regard? And secondly, what improvement, if any, do you like to see the PSC taking on?
I think it's part of the mandate of the PSC to deal with dispute resolutions, yes. But one important element that they talk about in the report that they make is that they would recommend that all procedures be exhausted within departments before matters can be referred to the PSC. So that when a matter is referred to the PSC, you are quite aware that the time that you're going to spend on that matter is worth it on the basis that this person who referred this grievance has no other alternative outside of the Public Service Commission. And for me, I think that is an important milestone, because it then says you cannot in any way build the capacity of departments for as long as you cannot let departments engage in resolution of grievances internally. Because that can also be used as a mechanism to run away from dealing with problems that are resonating within departments in the public service. It has been doing very well. Because, as they indicated, some of the grievances that were referred to them were not necessarily supposed to have been referred to them. That is an important element. Because people need not do things simply because issues have been referred to them, then they must do it. Institutions must know to what extent are we able to act on issues of this nature, to what extent are we able not to act on issues of this nature. So, in relation to dispute resolution internally, particularly those that are within the mandate of the PSC, it has been able to resolve them. Because the rate, that is my assessment, the rate of grievances that have been referred to them are not alarming in terms of statistics, in terms of numbers, when you look at the kind of the Public Service Commission we have in terms of numbers. Now, they've been able to do that. They've been able to resolve that. They've been able to refer back some of the grievances that are not necessarily resonating with their mandate. And an interesting element, that they've entered into a memorandum of agreement with the public protector. That then says, we must delineate responsibilities in such a way that the public protector will deal with issues that are referred to them by the public. And the Public Service Commission will deal with issues in relation to your question internally. That then gives you a better understanding of between these institutions, between the kind of skills that we've been able to have, how then we help one another deal with this grievance. The emphasis that they did put in terms of the report they tabled as well, what was that there is a need for Labour Relations employees to consistently be engaged in doing their work as Labour Relations employees. And there is a need for managers to be able to manage. These grievances that are necessarily resonating within the public service can, to a large extent, be resolved internally. Yet an interesting aspect of some of the grievances referred, which they also did very well, was on performance management. That some of the grievances that are referred to them are such that they give an assertion that it's employees who are necessarily frustrated at senior management's inability or middle management's inability to move in relation to creating an environment where all of these people can perform. And that in itself has compelled them to then want to further assess their audits as to what are the best possible ways that can help address this problem of government.
Thank you very much. I really wish, you know, we could continue, go on and on. Unfortunately, because of time constraints, we have to stop. But I need to ask this very last one. And please, Honorable Member, please be brief, very brief on this. I'm coming to you now as Mama Roba, as a person. Looking at your strength, what is it that sets you apart that will enable you to perform extremely well as a public service commissioner? What is it that you are very passionate about in the context of the public service commissioner that will make you special, that will make us consider you to be the right candidate for this job?
It's an interesting question, I admit, taking into account that one must be precise. Being a member of parliament is an important ingredient that I personally think puts me above the rest. Why? When you get to understand what is required of a public representative, when you get to understand what is the responsibility of a public representative, you then get to understand an impetus that must be put in place to ensure that there is service provision in the country. That is the first point. I'll try to be short as well. Recently, my brother has been in Zimbabwe, and they were looking for a calculation of converting US dollars to rands and so on and so forth. It was difficult for them to understand if they sell this US dollars, how much would they get in terms of rands. Here comes a gentleman who just says, "My friend, how do I help you? This is not what I tend to convert, to calculate as to how much money we're going to get." You see, you look at them and say, if you divide this by this and multiply by this, it's equal to, and this is the amount of money that we're going to get in time. When they calculated it, it was perfect. He had become an account. And when you looked at him, you could not simply say, he can be a better public servant, just so he can. Who could not need a calculator to be able to resolve a simple mathematical expression? A country that cannot give its people skills would not necessarily survive the global recession. My passion of an educated citizen resonates in such a way that when you see bottlenecks that arise out of the public service, and when I believe that I've played a particular role in Parliament as a public representative, I also know that being a public service commissioner compels one then to say at a closer range, what is it that we're not doing accordingly correct? And how must it be done? Lastly, going back to the first aspect that separates me from the rest, when members of the public and public services or employees come to account to Parliament, to a large extent, they always think that this is a semi-court. Even if I didn't apply for this position, I would not have in any way, without necessarily saying I would be paramount in Africa, I would not have the fear to then look at you and say this. I can't tell you this fact that you must hold the public service accountable. And if you're failing on your head, your feelings are not bigger. That is the passion that I have.
Thank you very much. Any questions from your side? To the panel? You have asked us so many questions in the interim.
It's tempting, honorable members, but I would ask the question which is mine, and it's the only one question. What has been the effect of interviewing a fellow member of Parliament?
I'm not going to ask you, colleague.
The effect. Well, it's been. We allowed you to go on and on because it was quite interesting, and you were giving a perspective from a public representative point of view, and that made it different from the other people that we have interviewed. But on a lighter note, I looked at the fact that you are a reader. And I looked at the books that you have read, and I found that in some of the books that you are reading are really books that I would recommend to young people like you to read, like Ngugi wa Thiong'o, and Dr. Wayne Dyer. And I also realized that the one that you mentioned, the Iranian Soul, I bought the book but I haven't read it. And this guy, the financial guy.
Yeah, poor dad.
Yeah, Kiyosaki, Robert Kiyosaki. I attended a business seminar the other day, and we had the privilege of talking to him through the teleconference. And I specifically asked him a question as to what advice he would give to us as ordinary consumers during this difficult economic time. And he said the only thing that he can say is that we should save, try to save as much as possible, because this repression is with us to stay for quite some time. So we have to get rid of luxury purchases that we normally do and try to save as much as possible. Thank you very much. You will hear from us in due course. Preferably, we will give you enough time if you get the position to enjoy Mosenege before you. Once more, thank you very much for the interest that you have shown in the post, and we wish you all of the best. Welcome and thanks for accepting our interview for this position, and we really appreciate the interest that you are showing to continue working as a public service commissioner. And my name is Jane Masonela, if you do not know me. Now I'm introducing myself as the chairperson of the portfolio committee. And I'm
Isaac Julius, member of the Lanzella Foundation.
And we have Honorable Trete from the ANC and Honorable Pavada. So you are familiar with all of us.
From the COP.
Yeah. Right. Commissioner, we have looked at your CV, and we have worked with you as a commissioner. And but because you are here, we would like you to please just say to us with your experience that you have both in the Public Service Commission and in the public service or in any other area where you have served.
what is it that you think will make us decide that you should continue to work as a public commission for another term?
Thank you, Honorable Matumela. Let me begin by congratulating you on your appointment as chair of the Portfolio Committee. It is me who should be grateful to the committee for inviting me to an interview. And I'm grateful for that. I thank you. But I think above all, I thank you for the opportunity you gave me to serve in the first term. If you told me that I would come out 5 years later a different woman, much more grown in the way in which I look at public administration, I wouldn't have believed you. It's been a wonderful experience, sometimes frustrating, but all in all, I think together with the Portfolio Committee and the Office of the Public Service Commission, we grow. Now, in answering your question, I would say to you, no, I'm a woman, you need gender equity. I'm not going to say that. I could say, no. You need continuity in a context where there are going to be huge changes politically and the committee may be reconstructed. Although that is an important consideration, I will not rest my case on that. Its major plank is really both the passion that I have come to have for public administration, seeing how fundamental it is for everything that you do in South Africa. In any state, there's nothing you can achieve without the public service. There's just absolutely nothing. You can have grand plans, you can have good visions, you can have all sorts of things, but without the public service, there is just nothing you can achieve. And precisely because of that, we've accomplished a lot together in the last 5 years, but much more still needs to be done to raise the bar in how we ensure that at the end of the day, the state, our democracy, has an astute public service, a public service that complies, that reflexively functions in accordance with the 9 principles and values that define good governance in South Africa. Our good governance is not abstract, it doesn't come from the World Bank, it is constitutionally defined. There is unfinished work that needs to be taken in a step further, looking into areas such as what is it that is making our public service not coherent? It's not coherent, as coherent as it should be. We've singularized it, we've made it a single public service, but it's not a coherent public service. What is it then that fragments the public service? And for me, one of the motivating factors for that is that within the constitutional schema, the starting point has to be the primacy of Parliament and its committee in ensuring that things within a context of the separation of powers are, at the end of the day, in accordance with the constitution. And within Parliament, for me, of all the portfolio committees you have, even when you look at SOPA, the one that is pivotal is the one on public service and administration. So it's my hope that we can then look at those areas that need to be looked at. There was a lot of legislation that was put in place in the last 14 years. We need now to go beyond saying the public service is not complying. I think the former chair, now Minister Aloy, hinted at the need for us to look into legislation. Could it be that compliance is not achievable because some of the pieces of legislation that we have are unworkable? And we found out with the portfolio committee when we went on oversight how the unintended consequences of different pieces of legislation were confusing public administration and making it difficult for it to rise to the challenges of service delivery, particularly at provincial level. So it would be re-examining what has been done so far. Of each and every one of the 9 principles, there is a piece of legislation in place and a stream of regulations that flow into that. And we as the Commission have sought to try and find reasonable indicators. But we did that apart from the Portfolio Committee before. What we need to do is to come together and look at the indicators that we have. Could it be that the very same indicators are drifting the public service away from what it's supposed to be? A good starting point being the one on principle 1, efficiency, effectiveness, and economy. It's now becoming clear to us that it's impossible to focus on all 3 of them. Whereas we started with indicators for all of those, matching those indicators to legislation. For South Africa, with a huge legacy of poverty that it has, you have to choose. It's either economy or alternatively efficiency and effectiveness. We are dealing with poverty and a huge legacy of needs that need to be met. It may be that we have to settle for efficiency and economy, and maybe add into that equity and then come back later to look at economy. Those are choices that the public service cannot make with comfort by themselves, especially when you have a strong treasury. It has to be Parliament that actually has the definitive say on how one indicator is pursued. And that is why at the moment different DGs will interpret principle 1, economy, efficiency and effectiveness, in different ways. And we are coming to you and saying departments are underspending and not fulfilling principle 1. But where we are, we need to be saying, why are they underspending? And go beyond non-compliance and say what are the structural problems that need to be looked at. And I think it's really very important, actually, beyond the 14th year, for a strong partnership and a strong articulation by the Portfolio Committee of what each principle means, because they are binding, they're not optional on the public service. We started summoning directors general to look into areas of some of the areas of the principles. The consequences of that is that they end up in jail. As I was leaving Pretoria, I was thinking there is one DG whose file is going to the SAP for non-compliance issues. That case has its own merits. The second case, I had to say to the officials, no, let's hold it. It may be that here, in a context where there's no single person that says, of each principle, we expect this. DGs just scramble, running around, trying to do the best that they can. And then in this kind of situation, the one of all of them that is dominant and can say what needs to be done in Treasury, and by virtue of commanding resources, they all follow. And when they follow, they drift away from the imperative of service delivery. The issues of intergovernmental relations. We combine public service, the public service, one single public service at national and a provincial level. While government itself has found it wise to organize them into clusters. Within those clusters, performance is highly individualized by instruments that are in place to manage the performance of the public service. Now, these are areas that the Portfolio Committee will need to look at, to sit down and look at the PMDS system. The ability of DTI to fulfill its function is dependent on foreign affairs. Therefore, the contract of the DG of Foreign Affairs must serve as its key result area what DTI means in order to be able to fulfill its mandate. So I think both the Public Service Commission and the Portfolio Committee now need to take public administration further and say, okay, with all these instruments, a great deal of them work, but some of them do not work, or others have contradictory consequences in the structure of the public service itself. Is it an ideal structure? It cannot be the parliament as the primary lawmaking body votes budgets to departments who carry parastatals, but somehow there's no mechanism for making parastatals accountable, particularly to this committee, on how they are following the 9 principles. I don't know if we have a mechanism that would include service delivery areas like electricity and water, where key decisions are made. Is there a mechanism for the portfolio committee to say, no, sorry, that principle was really not abided by in reaching a particular decision? That is work that needs to be done. The Constitution allows the portfolio committee through legislation where there are gaps to fill those gaps. It needn't be on the back of the Public Service Act or the other act that is underway. Of its own volition, Parliament can say, we have seen a gap that we think needs to be closed. This is quite apart from the fact that the Public Service Act in itself has got key problematic areas. We didn't see this when we were amending it. I think because the Public Service Commission is coming from a defensive point of view, defending its terrain, and you were mediating between us and the DPSA. But at the end of the day, what is critical is the functionality of your public service as the key delivery instrument. The one area where we found that the source of the tensions between the DGs emanate is from within the Public Service Act, which definitively vests powers, functions to ministers which ministers can never hope to fulfill, but DGs bear the consequences of failure to comply and fulfill those functions. So that's why I said, I don't think that you would expect me to say, no, you need to fill the quota of women, and you need to have a continuity. I think you'd want to know that your investment in you is matured to deliver a base for further investment in you.
Thank you very much. Now, if we were to say that this committee rightly are giving you another opportunity to continue to serve for the next 5 years, and in view of your experience, what you have observed so far, what is the one most important thing in your view that you would change within the Public Service Commission in order to create a better working environment and also ensuring that the Public Service Commission becomes effective?
The Public Service Commission is unique in being a small body responsible for a huge mandate. It is actually 9 commissions in 1 commission. When we go abroad, we're told that there's a commission for efficiency, effectiveness, and this and that and that. There's another commission for transparency in Kenya and all of that. We have a staff, we fulfill our mandate through a staff of no more than 250. So we've never complained a great deal, although we do draw attention to the limitations in the staff. We've never really focused on that. But I think if we're to go into the future and really, really be the effective technical a palliative arm of Parliament, we would need resources. There are areas that we have as yet to reach. We're forced to make choices on behalf of Parliament that we shouldn't have to make. Do we explore this area or don't we explore that area? Do we do this or don't we do that? But that's a resource matter. It's not about innovations that one would bring into the public service. We're losing the staff because the staff that we have is high level staff. It gets poached periodically. And I usually say to them, they actually are going down, they're not progressing up into the public service. That is the base material that we work with. We have to nurture it. And we have to find a way in which they understand that pay doesn't really actually matter if they have fulfillment and experiences that are enriching. And with my diplomatic background, one of the things that that I intend, which I've also been exploring, is the recycling them into the UN bodies where they would have to interact with high level officials on ethics, for example, raised about. So if we had somebody going for 2 weeks to the UN, for 2 weeks to the OECD, for 2 weeks to regional structures and coming back, and also interacting, working, and getting a sense of what happens in the UN when it comes into areas of ethics. That will enhance, but it will serve as a retention mechanism. And accepting that at the end of the day, they will want to move after 5 years. In order to be able to make them feel they have a stake in the public service, we must career path them into the UN bodies where they will serve as emissaries of South Africa, even though they will end up as functionaries of the UN. That is in terms of the staff that we are working with. In terms of the content of the work in terms of our stakeholders, we focused on delivering the goods for the national legislature. We can do better on stakeholder relations. We are required to by the Constitution, and building on the Citizens Forum, we need to bring them back. Once in a while, have a huge endeavor on a particular service delivery area. That is our mandate. So that primary stakeholder, the citizenry, we haven't interacted with fully. But I think also how we've linked up with provincial legislatures has not been ideal. We need to improve on that significantly. How we work with academics. The difficulty with academics is that the Public Service Commission is the primary generator of what they work with. And sometimes when we're developing tools, we need the safety that people are not going to run away with some of the work that we're doing. And we were told by DCZ that in other areas there's actually virtually no competences that we can draw on. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't have a vibrant relationship with the academic sector where we are challenged and where we challenge them and interest them. Not many universities actually realize that for public administration, the starting point in the curriculum is Chapter 10 of the Constitution. Nothing else but that. In terms of the content of the work that we are doing, hoping that with the interactions that we'll create for our officials, we will work efficiently and raise our analytical rigor. We need to get into policy analysis and evaluate policies. Chapter 10 allows us do that. It is correct for the Public Service Commission to evaluate whether a particular policy was formulated as required by the Constitution in consultation with the people. And whether that, in one principle, your consultation and responsiveness, whether the policy actually does respond to the needs of the people. We haven't done that as yet. We haven't looked at the match in policy and the needs. But ultimately, the critical thing would be to have a sense that after 5 years, we will have a very strongly supported portfolio committee, because the portfolio committee is a transfer portfolio committee. The others are issue specific. It is the portfolio committee that has to guide on what happens to public administration.
Thank you very much. Honorable members?
I'm satisfied.
You're satisfied. Honorable Chair?
Do you mind if I call you?
No.
When you're coming, we're discussing this with Mr. McCarrant, what we did, because we thought that the questions would be different to those that are not within the public service. You are already in the public service commission. So I have two questions to ask. And the reason why I'm raising this is because I'll be asking questions that, you know, in the Eastern Cape, what's happening in the Eastern Cape, that the MEC for health, Penny Majority, when she started, she called all the people that were suspended to come back and work while the cases are still on. And most people, I'm from the health background, that's why I have interest in the health. Most people said no, that was good, because those people have skills, majority of them. And we thought that, why is it that, you know, it takes about 1 to 2 years and people are getting their full pay and not using their skills and they're sitting at home? Why is it that you, the department, or your, is taking time to deal with the matters of what? Any kind of matter, that makes people to be suspended. Why is it, you know, because we take it as waste of time, skills, money, because those people are getting money, they're suspended, and they get full paid. And members themselves sometimes become very frustrated to get paid without doing anything at home. So I know that has been, you know, interacting with some of them, saying, hey, it's so frustrating to get paid without using your skill. Mm-hmm. So that's part one. And I know that in public service, we've been asking candidates, well, what do you think the public service commission, whether the implementation of affirmative action is done by your department, I mean your commission, do you think you've done enough, or you still have to do more? The reason why I'm asking this question is because I've asked candidates, you know, in terms of people with disabilities, and coming again from the Department of Arts and Culture, they always talk about buildings that are not done yet, and all the problems that they're faced with in terms of making sure that there's enough staff with disabilities.
The case about people who are suspended is one that also concerns, I mean, it comes up in the media very often. It's threefold. The problem is threefold. Most immediately, it's the investigative capacity of departments. Most departments are really very weak. They don't have people who can expedite the completion of the investigation. And the second problem is that the HR departments were finding have no comprehension, don't understand the prescripts that are in place, be it on investigations, complaints, or the grievances. So they will drag out the process unnecessarily when the fiscals are really quite clear about what needs to be done. And here's where I was saying that we need to go back to the Public Service Act and look at it. Ultimately, with issues such as those, the person who has to actually sign off on them is the EA.
Mm-hmm.
So many officials and many directors general sit and think, well, I've finished it. And then they get caught out by Nehao and the unions because the process was not taken to its logical conclusion to the executive authority. I believe it's a function which if ministers want, they better set aside time to do it. It's a difficulty mostly to get ministers to come and sign off on, so they get stuck. That's the third dimension of it. The other dimension of it is in the Labour Relations Act, the unintended consequences of the Labour Relations Act, and the subsidiary prescripts that say, I think the provisions that say sometimes you cannot even, you have to follow a particular path. You have to follow a particular path. And the unions know this very, very, very well. So when you combine the unintended consequences of the Labour Relations Act and the weak capacity within departments and the contradictions contained in the public service, amended Public Service Act, you then get these cases dragged out for a long time. Now, we can't come in immediately as the Public Service Commission because of these prescripts.
Yeah.
And then in a context like that, that the people concerned then use the instrument to defend themselves. So while an investigation is going on, you get an official raising a grievance against the same person, against the same department. So the department ends up engaged in resolving the investigation, in dealing with the investigation, as well as resolving a grievance. So its resources are then tied down. But ultimately, it then all has to work up to the ministers. Ideally, ordinarily, it should be possible while you're investigating somebody to deploy them elsewhere. But I believe that the Labour Relations Act says that would undermine the dignity of the people, and that if you were moved from your post, people would start thinking, I don't know, these are things that I'm saying that we need to explore to go a step further. Mm-hmm. Look at all the prescripts. Why are the prescripts not working as they're supposed to? Because with grievances, with 30 days, it should have been cleared.
Mm-hmm.
With investigations, there is a time limit.
Mm-hmm.
The prescripts of the monitoring evaluation schema that says so-and-so will do this by such and such a time, but ultimately, the executive authority must sign off on it. And then the question of affirmative action. We're not doing well on the disabled at all.
Mm-hmm.
We're not doing well on the disabled. It may be that we invest in universities and measure people into the public service from there. But culturally, when we had hearings where we summoned Director General to come and account to the public service for why they were not fulfilling a small quota on the disabled. One of the things that came out was that very often people who are disabled don't want to put in their application forms that they're disabled because they feel they will be stigmatized. So it's not, you can't even sift. At the recruitment process. With gender and race, I think the fundamentals have been laid.
Mm.
What the Commission has said in its report is that we now need to shift away from quantitative, shift a step up from quantitative compliance in numbers. to ensure that the people affirmed succeed by ensuring that they are trained for success. Because again, some of the complaints and the grievances come out of the fact that so-and-so was brought in, not from marriage, or you get a person coming in but they're not given the support, and then they don't function because they don't understand the prescript, and then it creates a lot of problems for departments. What we need to do now is to focus on supporting for success and functionality.
On the paper.
I would like to make a follow-up on the affirmative action one.
Right.
What is your view on this one? There is a perception out there that affirmative action has got a negative impact on productivity.
Actually, we have affirmed the entire public service. What we have, all of them, are affirmative action cases. What we have not done is to bind them together in a common culture of high performance and excellence. If you look at, I started at Foreign Affairs. I started at Foreign Affairs where I was working with a director general who had no analytical ability, foreign policy wise, because they'd never done foreign policy. We were always reacting to sanctions.
Mm.
So they hadn't served as diplomats.
Mm.
I moved from Foreign Affairs to Trade and Industry,
mm.
where Trade and Industry had never functioned as an ordinary Trade and Industry department, but it functioned as a sanctions busting department. If you said to the OECD, get us oil by all means, they would find it for you. But if you say, what policy is not working, for example, the current financial crisis,
mm-hmm.
if you said rise to it, what economic policies do we need to rise to that? Then they would get stuck. I know this because when I took over, when I set up the International Trade Administration Commissioner, I had to say to officials, we are not executing WTO policy against South Africa. There has to be national interest. And the way in which you read national interest is to think broadly. Think that there may be times, no, you think defensively. If we're saying we want to create jobs, as we conclude trade agreements, I must bear that in mind. The first trade agreement that we concluded was with the EU. We from ITAC were saying, no, you're going to kill the agricultural sector, and you're going to make it impossible to deal with the legacy of the past. They hadn't been trained to work that way. For them, if you're signing a trade agreement, you look at the tariffs that you needed to do away and not to do away, or that you needed to circumvent and not to circumvent. And I would say to them, no. You need to look at economic areas. The Western Cape was still Eastern Cape was still a blanket-making area, Waverly. That if you sign an agreement with somebody, what is going to be the impact on the Eastern Cape if you depress Waverly? This was a new ball game for them. And we'd have to sit. These were old officials who'd been in the public service, I don't know for how long. We'd have to read, we'd have to challenge, and then we'd have to come back. Then we could proactively apply anti-dumping policies, proactively against China. And whenever we did that, they would fly in here like a shot, bringing public officials. But for our public officials to engage with them, they needed to understand that it is about the state. Public officials serve the state, so you get the best that you can for the state. We didn't start with a common culture of that. You talk about writing skills. For foreign affairs, the difference between a bad report and a good report is a war. And you get people who say, I've been in the Foreign Service for 20 years. And they send a brief for the president that can easily create misunderstanding.
Mm.
This is part of the unfinished work that the committee has to go back to. Balama has to now come back and affirm everybody. Mm. We cannot assume that there is any one group within the public service that has skills that will be debased by affirmative action or another that doesn't have skills. I accounted for the police at the UN when I was a UN South African ambassador. I remember going to see the police, General Fivers was still there. He looked me straight in the face and said, you know, Ambassador, I am so happy. We are transforming the police. And I said, what have you done? And he said, we've demilitarized the police. Mm-hmm. And I said, it was never my understanding that the police were a military force. Subsequently, working with General Fivers, that's when we discovered with the UN that 80% of our police couldn't drive. They could not drive. Because of the mode of policing then. They used to move them with huge trucks.
Mm.
There was no need for a driver's license if you're going to be in a hippo.
Mm.
Yeah.
But crime now requires a different skill.
Yeah.
So you have a problem, people call and say I've been robbed, there are cars and the police cannot drive. Because they don't have license. Second thing was the functional literacy. Functional literacy. It's important to effective policing. Writing a statement and saying, Mr. Bosa was mugged by so and so and so and so. So many of the cases collapse in court because at the source of the origin of the crime, there was no functional literacy. I worked with some of the police. And I could see marginal improvement. So I think appropriately at the time that we were finishing laying the basis for our democracy, we had to focus on the constitution and the initial laws that needed to have been made. Now is the time to focus on public administration, because without it, there's nothing we can do. Doesn't matter what kind of manifesto you have. Without it, that you just cannot move. So on affirmative action, I think the discussion is posed incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
It really is posed incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
I trained at the UN lawyers who ought to have been here at the service of our police, who knew nothing
mm-hmm.
about the issues that South Africa would be expected to attend to. And there are experts now outside the public service criticizing the police. I'd rather have them inside the police and working with the police to ensure that they improve. So I cannot see
yeah.
that.
Mm. Thank you. By the way, yes. I'm tempted to ask, you know, this question. From the Department of Health. And I have a belief that women can make things happen, because in most departments, once it's led by women, things are better. Sorry for...
I don't know whether to allow that question.
The shortage of skill is a national problem or challenge in all departments. And I remember when I was in the committee of health, there was an issue on the rural allowance, where you find that people with skills like doctors don't want to go to rural areas because of not having enough payment from the department.
Mm.
And I think Dr. Tanzinga was still alive from Badawi. When I asked him, I said, no, Sam was still studying with the director to check between rural, urban, rural, and what, because a person from building my where I stay is very near to Bishop. And then he said to me, can you call that a rural area? Then I said, how long is it going to take for you to check between a far rural, and when is it going to happen, that we have a strategy of making sure that we retain people that have skills in the rural area? When are you going to implement this kind of, whether it is implemented now, I do not know, but you are not here to account. I'm sorry for for your public service committee.
No, no, no. Mike, as I said, that we can't assume the existence of certain skills. But that, for me, also goes to the generality of South Africa. We're all learning. We've never had democracy before, so we are all learning. But having said that, in the public service, there's no shortage of skills. The public service is not competing with anybody who's poaching their skills except at the higher end when it comes to DJs. They're just competing with each other. People are paying musical cares. One minute a person is a trade and industry, and the next minute they're at National Treasury, and before you know where they are 18 months down the line, they're a DDG in the presidency because of some of the things that we did when we transformed the public service. The competitive element that I think may have had merit, but it has had unintended consequences. Depriving the public service the possibility of training and nurturing its own people. The foreign affairs, even the hardship element of compensation for your posting has been taken away by DPSA. And this is where I think you need a really very vigilant committee on public service and administration. You can leave. You can say it should not really be difficult for administrators of hospitals in certain areas in order to attract and retain people to remunerate them at a certain level. I remember we brought a report to you on moonlighting by doctors. And when we went on the oversight visit, one of the administrators said he understood why it was happening. And he only wished he had the scope for them to moonlight in his hospital. What he was saying there was that the way in which we transformed the public service has had unintended consequences, such as moonlighting. It's not that people are naturally devious, they want to serve the state. But when we pay them in a particular way that forces them to be that way, we need to examine what is it that is not working. So that is work that needs to be done by the portfolio committee. It can do it indirectly by asking the commission to look at what dispensations ought to apply. Bearing in mind that they will be negotiating. These are some of the areas that ought to have been taken in, into consideration during the strike. But which the portfolio committee can champion of its own accord and commission a piece of work to see where are the structural rigidities that move away against making health accessible to everybody, including the rural areas. Why can we not attract a doctors? If then a hardship element component over and above, I think that a professional specific dispensation has to be considered. You can recommend working jointly with the portfolio committee on health.
Yeah. Okay. Honourable caller, nothing.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Any questions from you, Mike?
A hope. A hope, but whether I'm here. Whether I get the job or do not get the job. You know, it takes a while to settle into public administration. People who don't understand it, it seems like a dull area, but it's a very difficult area that requires consistent plodding. My wish is that the portfolio committee doesn't change significantly after the election. There's pretty much the same people that have been in it
become the sector of continuity,
yeah.
Especially for the public service. The worst of things to happen would be to start from scratch for the commission,
yes.
To negotiate,
yes.
A new relationship,
yeah.
for the commission, and then to have to structure a new approach when we need to build on when there is still work to be done, to be carried forward. That's the wish that I would have. I know that there will be adjustments that are made, but of all the portfolio committees, this one is the one that cannot afford significant upheaval.
I think we will propose that you are sent as an ambassador again to our political party. So you can send it.
Yeah,
that's it. That's
okay, on that note then, Commissioner, I would like to thank you very much for your time. And we have really enjoyed being with you. And I hope you also enjoyed being with us. And you will be informed about the outcome in future. I think it will be before the end of this year. And then, in the meantime, I wish you all of the best. And now, the mic.
No, I don't get
the mic.
No,
we'll
be here with family together.
Listen to this.
We've been there for some time.
We've been in the trenches
together.
Yeah. Where we were chasing water.
Mm.
Because of
yeah.
The, we were chasing water in Richard Bay.
Mm.
We started in one place, and they said, no, we don't have the function for delivering water anymore. It was taken away.
Oh.
Richard Bay. We had to go to Richard Bay to follow the water.
Yeah.
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 No, my first time.
Then was an interesting one. Yeah.
I think. And then the people that came was Dr. So and so, Professor So and so. Everybody was full. Then I said, yes. She's only for me. Because, you know, what I've learned here in the committee, that.